Well, there you have it. Welcome to the Bitcoin panel. I am so psyched to be here with some awesome people, and Carl's here too. What's up, Carl?
Hey, how's it going? Good.
Yeah, we literally just started. So Carl's here, Isabella's here, and AC. Welcome, everybody. Excellent. So we're just going to have about a 1 hour chat and about Bitcoin, about the news this week, about various things. So this is just kind of like a hangout, and we really enjoy it. So hopefully you're watching, and hopefully you can subscribe and follow the channel and all that stuff. But let's do quick introductions. I've been podcasting for so long. At first I always did like proper introductions. And then I got to a point when I thought it was cool to just jump right in and then like in the middle do introductions. But let's do it up front. AC, why don't you start, man? Who are you and what do you do?
Actually, I'm going to defer and say ladies first.
Okay. Oh, you know what? Wow. It's International Women's Day.
That is true. At least you have a woman on the show. So
Isabella.
Well, thank you. I'm Isabella Santos. I am the TV host for Bitcoin Backstage. I just recently also co-founded the company called Get Based, which is like a production company. And I moved to Isla Mujeres, to Orange Pill, an island. So that's me.
Wait, where is that?
It's in Cancun.
Oh.
Yeah, it's off the coast. So you land in Cancun, you drive to the ferry station, and then you take a ferry to Isla Mujeres. It's right next to Cozumel. The thing is, I recently did a documentary for Motive. I don't know if you guys have heard of Motive Peru. They are this organization that they focus on using Bitcoin as a tool for freedom. So they teach humans and people that have been neglected by the government to utilize Bitcoin and escape their current situations and have complete freedom of their finances. So after seeing them, I realized I need to do something better for the industry and help out other people in what a better way. So I decided to move to an island and start small and create a Bitcoin circular economy there.
Oh, that's so good. We're going to have, you know, hopefully the Bitcoin panel and Fractal Bitcoin gets so huge, we can all come down to visit you and contribute to that local economy.
That would be awesome. Yes, I'm going to need help because I just got accepted for Mi Primer Bitcoin. So I'm going to like write, I'm going to be like doing a node. So I'm super excited for that. They're going to give me the education packages so I can offer these classes to little kids.
Oh, that is so good. I just covered a news story about in El Salvador. They're showing the kids opening up Start9 servers and all this. Yeah. And I'm like,
nice.
There's nothing, almost nothing that makes me happier than that, right?
No, come on. You have to start with the kids. That's what Coca-Cola did. You know, they started giving out free Coca-Cola to the children, and now everybody's drinking Coca-Cola. We got to tackle the next generation because the baby boomers are very hard to convince. Not even convince, but they're very stubborn. And they're not going to see Bitcoin as a form of money because they've been using the dollar, and they don't realize that the end of the dollar is coming soon.
Yeah, that reminds me of a way that some spiritual masters describe spirituality and your potential. And potential is that we all start out almost like just a block of wood, and then over time we carve it and we become something. So you can make a chair out of a block of wood, right? But after you make a chair, that's pretty much it. You can't really make anything else. It's a chair, and that's it. So in this analogy, the kids are just a block of wood. They're not carved yet. They don't have all the programming. And so that's why the older generations, they're not getting it. And it is what it is. But the kids and what they're doing to the kids on the negative side, we all see that, right? All the negative programming.
Exactly. They're teaching them all this stuff that is so bad. The education system, it's garbage now everywhere. So it's sad to see. So we got to be the change that we want to see in the world.
Awesome. Yes, I love it. All right, AC.
How do I follow an intro like that? No, I'm just kidding. So I've been on the show a couple times. Chris, thanks for having me back. I really enjoy these sessions that we have on Friday afternoons. A little bit about me. I was in the military for a long time. Started Bitcoining in stealth mode way back when, while I was still in uniform. During my journey down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, I started to really see what was wrong in the world. And really, I wouldn't have seen it through that lens without Bitcoin. So after leaving the military, I've really started to focus my time and my effort and really my passion in Bitcoin. And that's where I am now, trying to spread the word, whether it's on social media, person to person, virtually on online. It's my passion, and that's what I continue to do and want to do for the foreseeable future.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, you bring so much knowledge and experience to this panel and any place you go. It's really, you know, really great to have you here as well. And Carl's here too from Studio BTC. Oh yeah, baby.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So a year and a half ago, I guess ish, I started helping Tatum with Between Two ASICs. So he does the frontman funny stuff, and I'm the guy that adds all the graphical spice on top of the episodes there, all the text crawler jokes and that silly stuff there. And started working recently with Murph, who was formerly of Murdoch Media under Bitcoin Trading Cards as their media arm called Studio BTC. So that's been really good too. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I thought of an idea for Tatum to come back on the show. Like, because I invited him today, but he was busy. But
yeah,
I want to tell him that even on if he's busy or even just any time, like I thought of it almost like a comedy sketch. Like he can just come into the stream in the middle and just pretend like he was trying to call customer service somewhere and just like some weird, and then just like after like 30 seconds or a minute of being funny, just like drop off and he's gone. So anyway, I'm going to.
That'd be on brand.
It'd be on brand for him. And I think it would be so, so funny. What is this? Satoshi's Legacy says Bitcoin trading cards, you have to come.
That's me.
Oh! Wait, the trading?
I was telling to the Bitcoin trading cards. I was going to say it's the best way to teach the kids.
Yeah.
Through the cards.
Good. So it's almost, is it almost like Pokemon cards or something? Or
they're really
similar?
Cool. They're like, well, trading cards are actually, I didn't know this, but I was with Julian and he does content for them. Julian is my business partner. And we were recording over in Madeira, handing out the Bitcoin trading cards to people. And they are, like you said, like the Bitcoin Pokemon cards, like the Mt. Gox. They are just cards and you can learn about Bitcoin. It has, I don't know, a picture of the banking system, and it explains in the back why the banking system is so corrupt. Or FOMO, what does FOMO mean? And these, there's, you can verify the number of the card and how many there are out there. And there's people that actually collect them. We got the Michael Saylor card. We ended up giving it to him and it was actually framed. Yeah. And there's only one out of 500, and there's very rare cards and obviously the not rare cards. So I guess the more rare cards you have, the more that they're worth. And if I'm not mistaken, the Bitcoin trading cards, they started like 2 years ago. And it's been booming.
Yeah, oh, Chris, awesome. You will probably see them over at BitBlock Boom this year.
Sure.
They were there last year.
Yep.
And I tell you, the crowd around them interested in the cards. I was talking to people and they're like, I'm buying these for my kids. My son is really into Pokemon and I'm going to try to orange pill him even though he's 12 years old. And so I think it's a super great approach to take to educating, you know, that next generation of, you know, what real and what sound money and what hard money really looks like. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it almost reminded me of flashcards because you could almost quiz each other on it. Like, all right, like you said, Mt. Gox, what was that? And then, that's pretty cool.
It's funny you say that. We were in a meeting just today and I was telling Aladdin, who's the founder of Bitcoin Traded Cards, we should release this as a flashcard app because flashcard apps, you've got the front and the back. And then you can keep track of which cards you have and which cards you don't. And so that's going to be coming pretty soon, too. good educational piece just to be able to grab it and look and learn about all, you know, what Mt. Gox is and the halving and all those things and who some of the heroes of Bitcoin are, Hal Finney. And it's tremendously educational. It's real and it's fun too. So it's a great way to orange pill people. In fact, they've got an orange pill pack. But yeah, it's a really fun group to be a part of.
What's up, Johnny B? Let's go. Yeah. And it reminds me, I had my granddaughter was making some art pieces and I just, you know, took a picture of it. She's 7. And I put it up on Noster and I said, hey, my granddaughter did this. And a bunch of people zapped her Satoshi. So over about a year, I've posted maybe 4 or 5 of her pieces and people zapped it. And she's, you know, earned about 600 Satoshis. And like every other time I see her, she's like, how many Satoshis did I earn? But she's too young. I can't get her like a wallet yet or anything. She's just too young. But anyway, it's...
You're never too young.
I guess that's true.
You could set up her own cold card and just gift it to her when she can use it.
Well, yeah, we're doing that with our older, my nieces and nephews who are like 10 and 12. For their birthdays, once they turn like now for their birthday, if they don't already have a hardware wallet, we're giving them a hardware wallet, having them set it up with their dad, then sending me the wallet address, and then I send them some Bitcoin, and then they verify that they received it.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. So let's get into like the news, like what's been happening. Isabella, how you been feeling the last couple days? I mean, we all-time high, then we dropped, and then to this morning all-time high. How you feeling?
I'm feeling overwhelmed. You know, every time I see the all-time high, I just want to keep stacking because I feel like I haven't stacked enough and that I'm never going to see it this low again. It actually gives me so much anxiety. I had this morning, I went for a walk, and when I got back, I had like 5 missed calls from my mom, my dad, my brother, my friend. They're like, yo, it's 70K. And I'm like, what are you going to do? I have no idea. And they're all like, yeah, we should have listened to you. Because the thing is, I've been telling my family from like a long time ago, I'm like, guys, we're never going to see Bitcoin this low again. Especially last year, if I'm not mistaken, it was like at 19K. And I was like, this is unheard of. Or is it? I don't even know. We're in 2024. It was in 2022. But it was in like 19K, right?
Yeah, like 15 something. It bottomed. Yeah.
Yeah, 15. Yeah.
Wow.
What about you guys?
You know, I think I remember you, Isabella, seeing a video of you interviewing Michael Saylor a while back. I always think about it whenever we hit all-time highs. I think about one of his, you know, most famous quotes, and it's going to be, he's going to always buy the top. And I think about that every time we get close, because I'll buy the top thinking or personally knowing that we might not ever see those levels again, even if I'm, you know, doing small stacks or, you know, DCAing in for that particular day. You know, we may never see the 30K level again. And at one point during our history in Bitcoin, that was an all-time high. And so it's a lot of excitement. And I think, and we talked about this last week, I still think this time is going to be significantly different from what we've seen in the past. I mean, all-time high before the halving, never been seen before. So it's interesting. I mean, I think, buckle up, it's going to be a wild ride.
I think this year is very unpredictable, though, because having the ETFs being approved and then we have the halving happen, it's just all the calculations and the speculations that people have been doing and giving, looking at the graphs and saying it's going to dip before the halving and then it's going to rise and then it's going to dip again. I don't think that's going to play into the cards here, because I was watching Simply Bitcoin and they were talking about how BlackRock, I don't remember what they were saying, but the gist of it was that people are waking up and they're realizing that they're not trusting these institutions anymore. They're looking for hope, and Bitcoin is that hope. If you have BlackRock, that they don't believe in the US dollar anymore, the normal people are like, then we shouldn't either.
Yeah, no, and I think you're 100% right. It's going to be so different with BlackRock in the game. Like, over the past week, they've got two new applications to the SEC to add Bitcoin exposure to one of their insurance funds. And then their, I forget, it's like a general allocation fund. And so really what that tells me is everybody who owns those particular funds, if those get approved, more and more people are going to own Bitcoin and not even know it. They're going to have exposure to the asset. Granted, it's going to be, you know, paper wrapped fiat in an ETF or something similar, but they will own Bitcoin. They will be part of that network. And some of those people are probably going to be against Bitcoin and anti-Bitcoin, but little do they know that they're going to be a part of the system and part of the revolution of the monetary system.
Yeah, Johnny B says, we need a dip. I'm just starting. Carl, what would you say to Johnny B?
I tweeted yesterday. I said, new Bitcoin all-time high today. I stacked. I hodled. 1 BTC equals 1 BTC. Therefore, new personal all-time high. So, I mean, it's as long as you are adding to your stack and not selling, like increasing it just a little bit, you're winning. You're going to get there.
It's a great point. It's all you got, just getting into the game and then doing what you can. That's all you can do. And over time, again, I always love this idea that we can't think in terms of months, or can't think in terms of days or even months. Even 1 year is like, okay, but think in terms of a decade or two or three. If you're young, you got many decades coming. And like, so stacking today, it's going to compound so much. It's going to become something we can't even imagine. So don't feel bad, but keep learning and just do what you can, right?
But do you guys think we're going to live to see hyper-Bitcoinization?
That is a great question. I've had this conversation with a couple folks in the past, and really what I think is there needs to be a catalyst. If we want to see it in our lifetimes, there's got to be a catalyst for it. I think eventually it's going to happen. But if we want accelerated hyper-Bitcoinization, there's got to be a catalyst. What that looks like, you know, we've got the bank trust fund program, the BTFP, which is getting ready to expire in the U.S. here on the 11th of March. And really, that exists to backstop banks after Silvergate and SVB and Signature Bank closed. So what happens when that ends? You know, we've got the reverse repo that is dwindling. It was as high as $2.4 trillion, now down to right around $400 billion. Are these the catalysts that we think might accelerate hyper-Bitcoinization? I don't know, but it'll eventually happen, maybe not in our lifetimes, unless there's a catalyst to make it happen faster. But I do think so. I think eventually we'll get to a point where people realize and they wake up from, you know, this money printing machine and inflation, and they finally say enough is enough. And what is the most secure, permissionless, decentralized asset out there? I mean, the four of us know what that answer is, and that's Bitcoin. And so I think eventually, yeah, we will get there.
When you say catalyst too, that sounds like hard times, and that makes me think of the hard times make strong men, you know, quote. But hard times are going to make for strong money too.
Exactly.
Yeah, that
it's the whole fourth turning. Are we at a fourth turning right now? Mm-hmm. I think that we probably are. The mainstream media narrative likes to paint a different picture, and you know, there's manipulation on multiple fronts to make it seem like we are not at hard times, and maybe we're not there yet, but it certainly seems like we're trending in that direction.
Yeah, I agree with you, AC. There's gonna have to be a catalyst, and if I had to bet what the catalyst is gonna be, I would say it's the U.S. dollar inflating a lot. Maybe not hyperinflation, but the U.S. dollar getting so out of control that it starts affecting people's lives, and like they start having trouble affording food and stuff like that. And in that scenario, I think another thing that might happen, of course, I'm just, you know, sort of daydreaming this, but could be, it's possible. I think some people, when the U.S. dollar crashes and inflation goes nuts, the people who have people who are holding Bitcoin, they're going to be able to like borrow against it or even use spend a little Bitcoin, and their lives might be in a lot better shape than people who have zero Bitcoin. And then the people who have zero Bitcoin might look at these other people and say, wow, they're still doing fine. What are they doing? Like how? And then when they start to realize that, yeah, well, that's because they're accumulating Bitcoin and opting out of the fiat scam. Anyway, those are just some thoughts. What do you think about that, Isabella?
Me? No, I'd just like to hear you guys' thoughts on it. Obviously, I do think for hyper-Bitcoinization to happen, there needs to be more education, and not in the theoretical way. I feel like sometimes we forget that Bitcoin is peer-to-peer electronic cash, and it takes out the middlemen. So most of these people, right now, I feel like the wave of Bitcoiners, yes, they're so into the Bitcoin movement, but they also forget that it, like, its true purpose. And going to these places where you have these people and children that are being fucked over by the government, and not like how the U.S. fucks over its people, but, you know, like Venezuela does or Cuba does, they need Bitcoin as a lifeline rather than, you know, oh, it's something that I stumbled upon and I agree with what it believes in. So I think we're going to need to find a way to teach the masses about Bitcoin, how to use it in order for it to, you know, for us to use it in our daily lives. Because that, yes, you can teach them about Satoshi, where did it come from, you know, the beliefs. But at the end of the day, I think we have to look at the root, that it's like, yes, it's cash. And if we want for people to use it, we need to teach them how to use it and find and develop simpler ways to do it. Because I've been in places where the people don't know how to read or write. So when they're looking at the, you know, they would use Bitcoin in layer two and they were using Lightning. They didn't know how to use Lightning because we had to teach them what buttons to press. So there's a huge population that they're illiterate. So we need to find a bridge. I think we're still in the developing phase. And I think, Chris, you said that we were still early, not to stress out because of the Bitcoin price. And you're right. We are still early. We need to, like, you know, patch the holes in our boat that could potentially, I'm not saying it's going to sink, but we need to make sure that the boat is perfect before we start sailing, and there needs to be more development.
Yeah. Don't forget, we're right now we're less than 0.07 million per Bitcoin. 0.07. We're just below that. I love thinking about it in terms of million, right? Doesn't that make a huge like perceptual difference? It's like,
it does. But I think people freak out because I think like 80% of the Bitcoin have already been mined. But the thing is, it's growing more scars as they mine it. I think just people have to put it to use.
Well, I think need, they say need is the mother of invention, right? Isn't that the quote? But I agree with what you said, Isabella, that the need for Bitcoin is what's going to drive the use of it. And so that I think we should keep stressing the need, all the different use cases around the world in different countries that where people can use it and actually benefit, right? And I know that's happening, I'm just saying. So much opportunity and so much learning that has to happen. And then, of course, the more you teach, then you come up against people's head trash, right? They have these silly, stupid, outdated beliefs and ideas. And it's like, how do they gotta clear the trash first and before they can receive something, you know, divine.
I can't. Carl, how are you maintaining a straight face?
It's all day long. It's all day long.
Oh, I love it. What's his name?
Come here, buddy. You want to say hi? What's your name?
Hi. Otto.
This is Otto. O-T-T-O.
Hi, Otto.
Nice to meet you, Otto.
Hey, Otto.
Can you wave? Hi. The audio's in my earbud, so he can't hear you.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
He's four?
Oh, yeah, he's four.
No.
Yeah.
You got a wallet set up for him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do Bitcoin on the birthdays and Christmas and chores for the older kids, too. Yep.
Very nice.
Well, I want to be part of your family.
Yeah, I'm trying to convince my daughter that she needs to do a gap year before heading off to college. I said, you know, what you really need to do, you've got a decent job at Home Depot. You should just stay here. Your food is your food and board is paid for. Start the nest egg now. Get a nice stack of Bitcoin going. Then do college. You know, you've got plenty of time, but you'll never be able to stack this hard ever again.
College.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That could be a new slogan.
See. I don't know if that's going to happen, but we'll see.
Stack before college.
Yeah.
But this in college, you get pretty good memories, though.
You do. But 1 year later, it'll be there.
That is true.
Have you pointed her towards the stuff that Ella Huff is doing over at Cornell?
That's a great point. I haven't. Yeah.
I love that she's open sourced it. And sorry to step on your toes.
She's brilliant.
Yeah, but it's all open source. Like I think it's like every 2 weeks she posts the slides and the video from the meetup so that anyone else can use the content for their own organizations or their own universities. Anyone I know who has kids of that age, and I don't know anyone that young really, but who has kids that age, I kind of try to point them and direct them like, hey, invest an hour of your time. See if this resonates with you, because I think, and there are a lot of us Bitcoiners who think that it's eventually going to change the world. And so if you take that head start now and understanding the underlying technology, you'll be that far ahead of your peers. And if you convince her to do a gap year, that's when she can really do like the deep dive down the rabbit hole. I think it would be amazing.
It could almost be like a gap year, but more like a Bitcoin year. Like take a year to learn Bitcoin even. Just
work and study Bitcoin and that's it.
And stack. Oh, I love it. Wow. Yeah, well, so there's...
I think that's the way...
Go ahead.
The thing that Ella is doing over in Cornell is unreal. Like she managed to have Cornell do a master's in Bitcoin. So that's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, my son is in college now. He's a junior. Well, he'll be a junior. Yeah. Yeah. And I asked him last year, so what do you want to do with the engineering degree? He said, I want to do small-scale energy production for rural communities. And I said, guess what? You're going to need Bitcoin. You don't have a choice. Bitcoin is in your future. You need to study it now because if this is where you're going, you're going to end up at Bitcoin. So he's not fully orange pilled yet. He's young. He's got lots of other things on his mind, but we had a really good conversation. Yeah.
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 I hate to sound like a broken record, but he should look at the research that Alex Gladstein has been doing with Stranded.
Yep.
I mean, because that is exactly what they're doing in Africa right now, is bringing energy sources to locations that don't necessarily need all that hydroelectric energy. And Bitcoin mining companies are sucking up all that energy as the villages and as the people start to adopt electricity for the first time. And then they can pivot away from it. I mean, it's a perfect fit, and it's right in his wheelhouse right now. So that's
I know.
Yeah.
There's so many options to learn. Local meetups. People can go to local meetups and learn. But also big events. We have the upcoming BitBlock Boom in Dallas, which a bunch of us are going to. And Isabella, you were just at Bitcoin Atlantis, and someone posted on Noster today that they attended Bitcoin Atlantis and they thought it was like a a pivotal, not a pivotal moment, but like a transformative moment in the Bitcoin community, that particular event. So what was your experience there? How did you experience it?
Well, it was like the first conference that I'd ever gone and not worked. So I was there like an attendee and it was crazy. Like I'm kind of impressed. I thought all the conferences were like this. I was like, wow, now I get it. And I bought my ticket to BitBlog, boom. But honestly, it was just everything. The environment, the way that it weaved out the people that couldn't be there, because getting there wasn't easy. There were people from Australia that had to take 31-hour flights. I got there through 4 forms of transportation, which was a ferry and 3 flights. The people from New Zealand, I was like, what? Everybody's coming together and just to talk about, you know, the things that they love, which is Bitcoin. So you would see tons of Bitcoiners there trying to orange pill the whole island. Like you would go on the taxis or the Bolts because they don't use Uber. And they'd be like, yeah, we are starting to accept Bitcoin. And since it was so small, you would run into all the Bitcoiners. So it was like your own little Bitcoin bubble. I remember the first day we went on a hike and we ran into John Donahue. He's from Mi Primer Bitcoin. And I was like, what? What a small world. And you felt it there. So I don't know. Did you guys go too? Or
no, sadly, I didn't. I really, really wanted to, but I had to attend virtually watching all the videos. And I can only imagine, you know, how hyped up I was watching the videos, how much better it would have been in person. Like Jack Mahler's, his whole time, energy. I'm not going to lie. Like most videos I watch at like 1.5 speed, but he was so deep. And he was talking so fast too, but he was so deep on Bitcoin that I actually watched it at 1x speed. And yeah, the energy in the stadium, I wish I could have been there. It looked phenomenal.
It was good. It was small and it had the right type of people.
Yeah.
When I saw the list of speakers, I was like, what? They're all going? I didn't think they were all going to go. I actually thought they were going to pull what they did in BitBlock Boom last year when they're like, oh, JFK is going to be here. But he was there virtually. I thought that's what they were going to do. I was like, there's no way you're going to have Michael Saylor, both Jacks, Lynn Alden, Natalie Brunel, all up there, like Jeff Booth, like
Preston
all these
Pish,
people,
yeah.
Preston Pish, you know, McCormick, all these people that you're like, you see on Twitter, you would see them walking around and you're like, what is this?
Yeah, super jealous.
That's what I thought about Michael Saylor. Like, because again, I thought he was going to join virtually. And then I started seeing pictures of he was there. I was like, wait, he's there? And that's when I really felt the FOMO, the later FOMO.
The FOMO. Michael Saylor does that.
It's not really FOMO, though. It's more, what would you call it? I don't know.
I would call it SOMO. Yeah, it's sad of missing out. That's how I felt.
That's right.
When I was watching all the YouTube videos.
Nice.
I'll call it DOMO, the devastation of missing out. It was just devastating. So, yeah, so what else is going on, Carl? What's going on in your world, in the Bitcoin world? You're very active on Twitter, by the way. I love it.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I was on Simply Bitcoin this morning, just listening. Not Simply, I'm sorry. Cafe Bitcoin, just listening.
Oh.
And then popped up for a sec to share a couple of things, but that's where, like, I don't know. I love these conversations because they really make you think and like hone your thinking. So some of the tweets that I did this morning were purely from Cafe Bitcoin. Like somebody said something about sacrifice, and I was like, oh, there's a great pun there. I tweeted, after you hodl Bitcoin for a while, you start to spell it sacrifice. Phew. so things like that. Those come from conversations with people and stuff, you know.
So Carl, I had a question
Twitter?
For you.
C Shanken is my name, so C? I'm sure like
wait, I had just here it is.
Or... Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, I'm sorry. That's the other one that I did yesterday. You had posted that.
No, but that's your Twitter handle on top though.
Oh yeah. 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 It's my Twitter handle.
Yeah. Shankin. Yeah.
So Carl, I was going to ask you, how hard or easy is it to get added to the stage on Twitter Spaces? Like, because so I listen a lot. I've never actually tried, but now I'm just curious. What does that process look like? I don't know.
I maybe have just a slight bit more access than some people just because of the association with Tatum. So we go to conferences to do content mining. Because the show is it's a comedy show, and it doesn't work like if you're going to try to interview somebody hilariously over a Zoom meeting. Like, it needs to be face to face. There needs to be live interaction. So what we do is we go to conferences and then we try to record several episodes of Between Two ASICs. Then we've got content in the can. We go home and edit and release it. So I've had the fortune to meet a lot of those cool people, you know. So I don't know if maybe it's a little easier, but I don't think it's that hard. You just, you know, hit the request button and wait. And if somebody pops you up there, say something. And if it's good, then, you know, people will follow you. And yeah, I don't have a ton of followers. That's like 700-800 or something. I haven't checked recently, but
it's
awesome. A really good place to go though. Cause conversations like this. And honestly, I like Twitter Spaces more than I like podcasts anymore, because you hear live thinking about what's happening right now. And then, especially if you want to jump on stage, just the mental exercise of being like, okay, if I'm going to say something, what would it be? That helps to refine your thinking too.
Yeah. No, I love it. Maybe one day I'll have the courage to jump up and hit
the
request button.
There's no reason you shouldn't. you're doing this is harder than that. There's no camera. You know?
Yeah. One day, maybe.
Yeah. So I want to run this, ask you guys a question. Cause this week I had someone so I do a daily Bitcoin news video, right? And the channel's Fractal Bitcoin. Anyway, it's a 10, 12, 15 minute video, just news topics, right? But I often cover like some fiat nonsense, some government nonsense, right? And I only do that for context, right? Because Bitcoin solves all those problems, right? Like it's like we were talking about earlier, you know, if you could show someone how their current system is completely effing them, then they'll be more open to the alternative, right? So on my show, I talk about just these egregious examples of corruption and stupidity and authoritarianism. And I had a guy who commented on one of my videos and he's like, you're not talking about Bitcoin. And I was like, I'm going to take this opportunity to explain that it's a matter of context. And so how involved are you guys in like the regular news in terms of fiat and governments, in terms of context? Do you follow it at all? Or are you just completely narrowly focused on Bitcoin? Isabella, why don't we start with you?
Well, I think, even if you're into Bitcoin, you need to have a well understanding of what's going on around everywhere. I feel like there's a lot of, I call Bitcoin like the octopus. You have like different aspects of like the education, the actual monetary policies, and you have the governments and then the theories of it. And I think you need to know what's going on, especially now that, you know, the Wall Street bros have been entering Bitcoin. You need to understand why they're doing it, like what's their mentality. And if you haven't been following and you're just looking at the price of Bitcoin, then you're probably like, yo, what, how did it come up to 70K? And the thing is, everything's connected in life, you know, it's just what it is.
Right. Makes sense.
I think it's similar to the price, watching the price of Bitcoin. After a while, you don't watch the price anymore because the price doesn't matter nearly as much as everything else. So the same thing with the news. Like, you, once you know that things are broken, like why keep watching? It just gets more broken over time, you know? So
true. AC.
Yeah, I would say that I pay attention to the news loosely, but I try to find alternative sources for news. You know, a lot of the mainstream media, I think they all have a narrative and they all have an agenda. You know, they are incentivized to stay in the position that they're in. And I think it was Charlie Munger who said, "Show me the incentives and I'll tell you the outcome." And so as far as news goes, I pay attention, but I also question a lot of what I see, or I try to look at it from, you know, a different perspective or a different layer on, hey, why did, you know, whatever politician make this decision, how are they incentivized? And so I look at it through that lens, and it's something that I learned through Bitcoin is what are the incentives? And so, yeah, I pay attention, but ultimately I see that there's always something else that they're trying to do or they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, they were selected to be in that seat for a politician for the best, for the betterment of, you know, the people. But a lot of times their incentives don't align and they're the betterment of themselves. And so it's frustrating. And I know we say this in the Bitcoin world all the time, but I really do truly personally believe that Bitcoin fixes that. It's going to take time and it's going to probably take some level of conflict, whether that's, you know, a kinetic conflict or a non-kinetic conflict.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I just really feel that, like, getting through to it's easier to get through to a normie or should I say a non-Bitcoiner or a not yet a Bitcoiner. It's easier to get through to them by showing them something literally evil and corrupt that their government did. And then, because then they look at that and go, whoa, really? I didn't know that. It kind of wakes them up. Whereas if I don't say anything about that and I just say, oh, Bitcoin's really great, you should look into it, they're like, yeah, I don't know. I'm busy with work, yeah. Right?
Pre-coiners, right? Yeah. That reminds me of Sailor's talk from Madeira. One of the quotes that I took down as a note was he said, in Bitcoin, we don't have enemies. We just have people that don't know they should be our friends yet.
Yeah.
It was a great quote.
That was a good talk, which is true. Yeah. Like a lot of people in the industry, they view each other as enemies. Like a lot of the shit coiners, they start talking bad about them. And they're like, oh, you're a shit coiner. But at the end of the day, I think we need to step back. I'm not a shit coiner at all. I'm just saying this from like a normal perspective. We need to zoom out and actually join forces, because if not, the government is going to like tear us apart. That's the thing. I think we have to look at the bigger picture and like at the end goal. Like, yeah, I know it sucks that there are all these other copy and paste. Not even copy and paste, but they're like trying to modify and, you know, get rich of a crypto, which doesn't make sense. But at the end of the day, we need to realize that we're fighting for something bigger. We're fighting for freedom. And that's what Bitcoin stands. All the other shit coins have Bitcoin, but not all the Bitcoiners have shit coin. So I think we need to look at it at that lens and not view them as enemies, but try to like look at them as allies. You don't have to like your ally, but at the end of the day, we need to fight for the bigger purpose.
Totally. Yeah. This is so meta, like this whole idea that a pre-coiner, we shouldn't look at them any, they're just not yet a Bitcoiner. Same thing with the shit coiners. We should look at them not with hate or anything, but just that, okay, they're learning and they're going through their own process. They're going to come around. And you
we
can even
all
say that.
Pre-coiners.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
not shitcoiners, but like we didn't know about Bitcoin until, you know, there was a point where we didn't know anything. You know, that's why the saying comes, we're still early. It's 2024. It's been like, what, 14 years? No, 16 15. Years.
Yeah.
15? Well, about to be 16 since like the white paper came out.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, not everybody comes to Bitcoin at a different stage in their life. So I think people need to be more empathetic with
yeah.
the people that don't know. Just teach them. Nobody's born knowing.
Yeah, I don't like a lot. There's a lot of Bitcoin maximalists who are just rude to other people, and they justify their rudeness. They're like, I'm going to be as rude as I want to be. And it's like, okay, you can be as big of an a-hole as you want to be. You have every right to be an a-hole if you want. But hopefully someday some maturity dawns on you and you realize you can still have your beliefs and you could still know the truth that you know and all that without stooping down and becoming very petty and emotional. I mean, you don't see Michael Saylor out there literally shredding other people, right? You don't. He doesn't do that. Why would he do that?
I've been thinking about Matt O'Dell's statement, stay humble and stack sats, recently. So the thing I've been thinking about is that you meet so many nice people in Bitcoin. And why is that? Why are there so many nice people in Bitcoin? And I think that it might have to do with the fact that to be this early, and we are still early, you have to be curious to get into it. And to be curious, you have to be humble enough to say, I might be wrong about what I thought I knew. You have to be able to shed what you thought you knew, and that requires humility. So we all had to have some kind of humility in the form of curiosity to get here. And that's why the saying is stay humble. Like, you had to have some kind of humility to get here. Stay humble and then stack sats.
Yeah. That is very true. And yeah, not many people like to admit they were wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I love that. And I think we talked about it before. And that's why I like, you know, the name of the company Ego Death, because I think, you know, the death of one's ego is required at some point during the Bitcoin journey to be able to, you know, challenge your own personal beliefs. And that's a part of your ego. And I also do like, Isabella, what you were talking about earlier with shitcoiners. I mean, part of my journey and that I've shared before in the past is I bought Bitcoin like most did in 2016, and you started chasing other things and bought Ethereum, shitcoined Ethereum, ERC-20 tokens were all the hype. I did all that. And eventually I got burned bad, like just about everyone else during that time. And went to the drawing board and really started to study Bitcoin and Bitcoin only. And what I found is others who did the same thing, you know, they were Ethereum maxis before or whatever. It's all okay. People make the decisions and that's their choice with their money. I'm not going to fight them over that. But I found that a lot of times people like who were big advocates of Ethereum or Solana or whatever, once they start to really study Bitcoin and invest the hours, they become some of the biggest maxis I know. And so I think it's a part of the journey. And I'm not here to say that all other projects are wrong, but I think that for what Bitcoin is trying to do and is currently doing, it is the best solution to fix the monetary and the fiscal problems of the world. The other projects there are tackling other things, and I think that's great. I think there's potential there. But I don't think any of the other projects are fixing what Bitcoin is fixing.
Exactly. And I think one of the key parts in somebody's orange pill journey is looking beyond the price of Bitcoin to the value of Bitcoin. And once you start to see the value of Bitcoin, then you don't care about the price as much and you understand why it's so important and that the price will do what it's going to do over time. I had another tweet based on that conversation earlier this morning. I said, the price of Bitcoin is the asset denominated in your local currency. The value of Bitcoin is the freedom technology securing the network and the amazing social infrastructure being built on top of it. Measured in value, we hit a new all-time high every single day.
I love it.
I covered that on my show today. That's how much I like that tweet.
Oh, thank you.
Really good. And by the way, it helps that the price is just going to go up forever, as Michael Saylor says, because if the price wasn't going to go up forever, then the whole dynamic of Bitcoin changes. But it's because of what it is and how it works that it will rise in value basically forever, that we can ignore the price, right? that fact allows us to ignore the price. I don't. Exactly. Does that make do you agree with that? I mean,
I do. Okay. Yeah. When you know that, like, the amazing work of Alex Gladstein and other people like that, and what Bitcoin is doing to bring people up, you know, around the world, then you realize it's not a speculative meme coin. It has value because of what's being built on it. It's not because we agree that, like, we trade this thing and I want it more than you do and I pay more. And it's not by all that buy sell action. That's real and that's important. But oh, I'm gone. Lucy, was that you?
No, you're here.
No, you're still good. You're still good.
Shoot. Yeah.
We can see you. Sorry. We can see and hear you.
My window just minimized. I thought somebody kicked the cord.
So
but yeah. The value becomes the most important thing. I forgot where I was.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that could be the greatest point ever. I want to ask each of you guys, if I could help you do one thing or achieve one thing in the Bitcoin space, what would it be? And I'm talking about me and all the listeners right now. If we could help you with something, because, you know, as an entrepreneur, as someone who has my own show and I'm trying to make a living doing my own show, quite often I feel like I need help and I don't know who to ask for help, right? So I think part of getting help is the other side of the coin is helping others. So let's talk about it. So Isabella, what can I help you with? What can all the listeners help you with? What are you looking to do in the near future?
Well, one of my biggest projects right now is the Bitcoin Island. It's called BTC Isla or Satoshi by Satoshi's Legacy. So the idea is to orange pill the island. So if there's any people that want to come and teach, or they can teach virtually or have any teaching experience that can teach me how to do it, that would be perfect. And also, I don't know if you're a company in the Bitcoin space and is looking for someone to create videos, reach out to me. I have co-founded Get Based, so we dedicate our time to create content to help other Bitcoin companies, you know, spread their message.
That's awesome. Get Based, right?
Okay. Yes.
You're going to have to, after the show, definitely send me all the links, Isabella, please. And I'll post them in the show notes and all that. But Carl, that's in a way tangential to what Studio BTC is doing, right? Because you guys are producing content for Bitcoiners and stuff, right? Oh, he can't hear? Okay. We're experiencing technical difficulties. That's okay. Yeah, your mic is muted, Carl. So let's move to you, AC. If I can help you, and if all the listeners can help you with one thing, what would it be?
Yeah, I would just say that is continue to share your story. You know, I've been in Bitcoin, started off in shitcoin. I started shitcoining, let's say, in 2016. And I really didn't come out of stealth mode until 2023. My close friends and family knew that I was a Bitcoiner. And I feel like I missed out on years of interacting and meeting Bitcoiners virtually or in real life. And it wasn't until I was at BitBlockBoom last year, first actual Bitcoin only conference. And it was an amazing adventure meeting people in real life, whether they were, you know, somewhat pleb like me, or if they were, you know, legends on social media and on YouTube. And so for all of your listeners, I would say the best thing we can do for each other is share our story and talk to people. Don't be afraid to step out of the light and let people know that you have a passion for something that fixes so many problems in the world. It was difficult for me to do, but I would have it no other way. And I think that people, if they took that challenge, they would find a lot of personal and professional fulfillment in, you know, doing things in public under their own name. And so that's what I would say to the listeners is you can't be a lone wolf forever. So your Bitcoin journey doesn't have to be lonely. there are a ton of Bitcoiners out there, like we talked about earlier. They're some of the nicest people in the world, who are willing to, you know, put their arm around you and teach you something that you didn't know, or they're willing to introduce you to people to help whatever it is you're trying to do in the Bitcoin space, just like what Isabella was saying. So share your story and do it in public. That's what I would say.
Yeah, that's really good advice. But what I heard you say was that we should all go to Cancun to help Isabella teach.
Yes.
That's what I heard. I don't know. Maybe that's, you know, what I want to do. Maybe they coincide. So how about you, Carl? Can you hear us yet? Or can you unmute your mic? Yeah, we're getting close to the time to end. And we do end on time here. The first few Bitcoin panels, we went over a little, and then I realized, you know, we should keep it to a tight hour, and that'll be great. So, Carl, are you there?
I think I got it. Can you hear me now?
You're here. Yes.
The audio is probably a little worse because the good mic got unplugged, but I'm back with it.
It's okay, actually. Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah. So if I could help you with one thing and all the listeners could help you with one thing, what would it be?
For me personally, I mean, there's a couple of different projects I'm working on right now. Between Two ASICs is coming back online real soon, so watch that show. And Bitcoin Trading Cards, I've been working with that crew as well. Super neat bunch of people. Good orange pilling resource for your friends and family, especially younger ones or anybody who has been into collectible trading cards. Great information. So supporting those two projects helps me. So yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. And make sure you send me the links for those. I think you might have sent one before, but
No,
this is great. So everyone watching the Bitcoin panel, if you have questions and things like that, we have a locals community and you can join our locals community. I definitely want to make sure you know about this. It's fractalbitcoin.locals.com. The link will be below. This is like our own private community where we can hang out and chat. Of course, I would like to do this in the Noster ecosystem, but they don't really have a lot of the apps on Noster are not quite there yet. So, which is kind of a bummer because Noster is amazing. I'll include the Noster links below. But I want to thank each of you for being here. This has been an amazing conversation. And what are the final words you would like to leave the audience with? That's what I would like to know. Isabella?
Stay humble and stack sats. And we're still early. It doesn't matter. I saw that Johnny B was saying that he just started, that he needed a dip. Be patient. I actually joined in our all-time high back in 2021, and I've stuck through the whole bear market. So this bull run is super new to me, and I don't like it. I do like the bear market because everybody's nicer. You know, you have true Bitcoiners out there. So, well, I like all types of people, so it's interesting to see where things are going, but I'm excited. So, yeah, stay humble and stack.
That's great. And Johnny B says, that's new to me, the term shitcoiner, but I get it. Y'all call yourselves that. No, we don't call ourselves that. Shitcoiners are people who trade the altcoins and the meme coins and all that other stuff. Bitcoin maximalists only focus on Bitcoin and nothing else. So basically there's Bitcoin and everything else is a shitcoin, right?
Exactly. There's Bitcoin and everything else.
All right. Carl, last words, final message.
I think part of every Bitcoiner's journey is becoming bipolar about price movement. You're happy that your stack is getting bigger and you're sad that it's harder to stack. So yeah, I totally understand, Isabella. I feel both ways about the price every time I see it. I'm happy that it's appreciating and I'm sad that I can't stack as hard as I used to. So it's just part of the journey.
It's good. All right, AC, last words.
Yeah, last words. Study Bitcoin and get off zero knowledge. I've said this before, but you know, a lot of people, they don't study the underlying asset and they are the first ones to capitulate when the price goes down. We had a 10% mm-hmm. dip earlier this week and people were freaking out. If they studied Bitcoin, they would know that it's just part of the journey. So get off zero knowledge, study Bitcoin.
Awesome. Well, thank you all. Thanks, everybody, for watching. And don't forget to subscribe to the channel and like the video and all that. And we'll see you next week. But don't forget, I do a daily video, news video every day on Fractal Bitcoin. So we'll see you then. All right. Bye, everybody.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris.